We're doing in Yaakov, we are in Tractate Shabbos. We're up to page Chafei Amud Bet. Amar Shmuel ben Nachman Amar Yonatan Kol Amar Bnei Shmuel Chatui Neola Toe. We had learned about the sons of Shmuel, and now we have another quote. If anyone's going to say that the sons of Shmuel sinned, that's also an error. So the verse describes how when Shmuel aged, his children did not go in his footsteps, and that's what led the Jewish people to say, we want a king. We don't want your children as our leaders. So Rabbi Yonatan taught us, if you think they sinned, you're making a mistake. Shneimar, the verse says, Vayika asher zaken Shmuel, as Shmuel aged, v'alchu banav bidrachav, his children didn't go in his footsteps. Now, the verses later on say, they took bribes, they didn't judge fairly. So the Talmud says, but look at the opening paragraph. The opening sentence is, his children did not go in his footsteps. And from that, you're supposed to infer, bidrachavu delo alchu, they didn't go in his footsteps, mechet nami, michta nami lo chatu, but they didn't sin either. The verse tells us, the greatest Jew that ever lived, in certain ways, Shmuel was the greatest Jew, greater than Moshe, greater than Aaron. In certain respects, Shmuel was greater. And his children didn't go in his footsteps, so they weren't so amazing. That doesn't mean they were sinners. Don't misinterpret the continuation. Elamani mikayem, so the Talmud says, but what do you do with the continuation? Later on it does say, Vayatu achei behabetza, they went after bribes. Shelasukim ase avihem, the Talmud says it's not to be taken literally. All it means is that they did not do what their father had done. Shaya Shmuel atzadik mechazer b'chol mekomot Yisrael. Shmuel was so pious that he went to every city in Israel, and he would be the visiting rabbi. He would visit this city and say, what court cases do you have? And he'd preside over them. Then he'd go to the next city. And this was the way that he would ensure that the moral fiber of the people was strengthened, and slowly he uplifted the whole people of Israel, because he'd be traveling and teaching wherever he went. The verse describes Shmuel traveling from the north to the south, judging all of Israel. And his sons, they didn't do that. They took a city, and they stayed in that city. What was their thinking? Why didn't they do what their father did? They thought, they said, this city, we have a lot of people here who have troubled times and troubled economic times. If we stick around here, we'll up the employment here. People will come to be judged by us. It'll become a center, and people will come from all over, and then we'll pick up the economy in this city. That was their thinking. It was a mistake. But the pasuk describes it as they took bribes. What the pasuk saying is, they miscalculated, and they gave too much importance to the economy of a certain city. That's the bribe they took. It's not that they pocketed money. It's that they misjudged. They should have thought it's far more important to travel and teach all of Israel. Instead, what they thought was, let's help the economy of the people in this town. Kitanai, the Talmud says this, the understanding of this story is really an argument between Tanoim, rabbis in the time of the Mishnah. The verse says, Vayatu achei abetza, the sons of Shmuel were misguided by bribes. Rabbi Meir omer chelkam shalu b'fim. Rabbi Meir says, what does that mean? That means that they would ask for pay directly. And a judge shouldn't ask for pay. A judge should judge. And at the end of the day, they have to give what donation they should be giving to the court. But he shouldn't ask for pay. When it says they went after bribes, it means they asked for pay. And that's why the pasuk says they took bribes. Rashi explains Rabbi Meir a little differently. Rabbi Meir says Shmuel was a Levi, and his children were Levim. And a Levi is entitled to Maaser Rishon. And when they would come and ask, we want Maaser Rishon, we want the tithe, which they were entitled to. But because they asked for it, everyone gave it to them, because they were the leaders of the generation. Everyone gave it to them. The other Levites didn't get their portion. Their neighbors all suffered because they lived in town. So Rabbi Meir says, when it says they went after bribes, it means they asked their tithe. which they were entitled to, but they shouldn't have asked for it. Rabbi Yehuda omer, milai hetilu al ba'alei batim. Rabbi Meir says they made a financial responsibility of payment for the people who lived in their neighborhood. And that was wrong. Rabbi Akiva omer, kupai tera shemasa natlu bezroa. Rabbi Akiva says they took extra gifts out of force. Rabbi Yossi omer, matanot natlu bezroa. Rabbi Yossi says they took portions of meat forcefully that they weren't entitled to. So there's different understandings. Either way, was it that they exploited their power indirectly or directly, or that they just weren't as pious as their father? These are the different opinions we find in about the sons of Shmuel. Okay, we'll start the next line in Talmud. The next line is about King David. We've been learning about different great people in Jewish history that are described as having erred and committing heinous crimes. And perhaps the most vivid story is the story of David and Bathsheba. The Talmud in Tractate Sanhedrin tells us that Bathsheba was a beautiful girl at age 7. And her husband was one of the great warriors, Uriah Hachiti, one of King David's chosen top 30 warriors. Her husband had gone out to war. And David went up to a rooftop to pray. And he looks out of the rooftop and he sees her going to immerse in mikveh. When a person immerses in mikveh, they're not clothed. And when he sees her, he is very taken by her beauty. And he summons her and he is intimate with her. And then she becomes pregnant. Now that story, at first glance, seems like a terrible transgression. Wasn't she a married woman? So the Talmud says technically she wasn't. Because when people would go out to war, they'd give a divorce contract to their wife and say, if I make it back alive, I'll remarry you. But I don't want a situation where you're left hanging. He's an MIA. And you're left hanging. So they would give a divorce agreement. David gets word from Bathsheba that she's pregnant. And he summons back her husband. He says, this way no one will know. Her husband comes back, and David asks him how the war is going, and then he sits down and eats and drinks with him, and then he sends him home. He says, go home, be with your family. That night, Uriah Hiti goes to sleep at the king's palace. He doesn't go home. The next morning, David asks him, why didn't you go home? And Uriah says, well, my master Yoav and all the people of Israel are out at war, and the ark isn't even in the temple, it's out at war with him. How could I go eat and drink and bathe and enjoy myself and make believe nothing's going on when everyone else is in a state of war? So no, I can't do that. So even though our sages don't make this point, I think there's a glaring point in this. David, during this war, went and slept with a girl he had no right to sleep with, it would seem. Okay, so technically he had a right to, but Uriah is coming back and saying, I can't go home to my own wife, and I can't do that. David takes him in that night. Now, Uriah rebelled against the king. The king told him, go home, and he says, I can't, I'm not doing that. That's already, he was deserving of the death penalty right there. The king tells you to do something, and you say, no, I can't. That's called being brazen against the king. The king's entitled to execute him. David takes him in and gets him drunk. And he figures when the guy's drunk, now he'll for sure go home and be with his wife, and at least no one will know. But Uriah goes to sleep at the palace gates. And then David sends him back. And the second thing that Uriah did was he's talking to David, and he says, my master Yoav. So he's also telling David, I know you're the king, but my master's Yoav. Yoav is the chief general, but he shouldn't be talking to the king that way. So David writes a letter telling Yoav, when you go to war, put him at the front, and ensure that during a time of battle, when you guys retreat, he gets killed. He doesn't kill him directly, but he does ensure that he gets killed. The prophet comes to David and tells him, you've sinned, and you're going to pay for this 5 times for what you've sinned. I'm making a long story short. Comes our Gemara and says, you think David sinned? You're making a mistake. What do you mean I'm making a mistake? The prophet told him he sinned. This is where we'll pick up, Ezrat Hashem, next week.